No access to government emails, no online payments to city departments, and thousands of pending home sales. Those are just some of the problems that have plagued the city of Baltimore since it was hit with a ransomware attack almost a month ago. Hackers left a message saying they would give back control of the city servers for 13 bitcoins, but Baltimore hasn't paid the ransom. And while the city is still in the process of restoring its digital infrastructure, this is not the first time that cyber criminals have paralyzed a major U.S. city. Atlanta was the victim of a massive ransomware attack last year, and it was just one of at least 169 known attacks on state and local governments since 2013. And these attacks are highlighting the vulnerabilities of U.S. cities, and some companies are wondering how to keep their lights on, while federal and state authorities are working to reduce the chances of more hacks in the future. With me now are Emily Sullivan, a City Hall reporter for WYPR in Baltimore, and Lee W. McKnight, associate professor in the iSchool, the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, how did Baltimore get hacked?
I think creating a metaphor about how this all happened is important since it's such an abstract idea. Imagine if, in the dead of night, a masked thief snuck into your local government building and loaded up every single document there, like pending permits, pending house closings, legislative drafts, and put it all in a truck and drove away. Now imagine that they put those documents in a warehouse that only they had the key to and demanded ransom money in order to unlock it. That's what's virtually happened in Baltimore nearly a month ago. The specific malware that anonymous hackers use to do this is called Robinhood. It encrypts all the data I just talked about and makes it inaccessible without a digital key. And experts say that it is virtually impossible to access that data without that key. Even the NSA doesn't have the ability to somehow replicate it. As you said, the hackers who are anonymous have demanded Bitcoin in exchange, and our mayor, Jack Young, has said multiple times the city will not pay this ransom. Baltimore was using outdated hardware and software, which cybersecurity experts say unfortunately makes systems very vulnerable. So while we don't have confirmation of how exactly the malware entered the system, that's the thing that experts are pointing to and saying is likely the cause.
Emily, we mentioned at the top some examples of things that had happened. For example, no access to government emails, etc. What are some other examples of what the impact of this hack was?
As you mentioned, basically the contents of every computer associated with Baltimore City are inaccessible. So city council members can't access documents of, you know, drafts or bills on their computers. Emails were down for city workers. The city has been able to restore some service, and they're prioritizing departments like police and fire. Online payments for things like water and parking tickets can't be made. So the city is suspending late fees on these bills. And the city has also been unable to pay some of its vendors. Most notably, I think, all real estate sales were totally stalled in the city because the lien system is inaccessible. The government was able to come up with what they call a manual workaround, but overall, the officials have said the revenue impact to the city is around $18 million. That's $10 million in response costs and another $8 million of what they call potentially lost or delayed revenue, like, you know, the parking tickets I was talking about.
Lee, I'm wondering, what was it about Baltimore's infrastructure that actually allowed this to happen? I mean, were they just unprepared, or was the hack even more sophisticated than the system could handle?
I'm afraid it was exactly what you said at the beginning, that they had this vulnerability that was Emily mentioned was known for several years. And there'd been an advisory sent out by Microsoft advising everybody to patch it and close it up 2 years ago. And obviously, that was not done in Baltimore. So I'm afraid it's a matter of manpower and following through on what they were advised to do by their vendors. Now, there's many, many of these patching updates and notices going out about vulnerabilities in software. But in this case, it has to, well, somebody should be embarrassed because they were warned about this and it wasn't taken care of even after they had a somewhat smaller scale incident, I believe, about a year ago.
So, Lee, I'm curious. We mentioned also at the top that this is the Baltimore hack was just one of at least 169 known attacks on state and local governments since 2013. What does that tell us about our infrastructure, just our technical infrastructure across the country?
Well, I was quoted in USA Today a couple weeks ago talking about local governments and city governments as soft targets. which meaning basically, you know, corporations got those notices from Microsoft too, and they have the staff and the manpower and the money to go ahead and patch their systems so they wouldn't be vulnerable to this. Unfortunately, as you say, Baltimore doesn't have a lot of money, and the staff is stretched and under strain and has older systems. So in general, local governments, city governments are sort of easy, and that's why you're hearing more and more about these attacks is on the professional corporate side or U.S. federal government side. These kind of things probably were closed up some time ago for this particular vulnerability, and not to say that there aren't others out there. So in general, there is a big problem for city, state, local government, small business, because there are just so many ways to get into systems and so many known and unknown vulnerabilities out there that need to be addressed.
Now, I'm wondering, Lee or Emily, if either one of you could respond, what is it that makes city and state or local governments like Baltimore so attractive for hackers? Is it just because it's simple, as you said, Lee, because they're vulnerable? Or is there something else that makes these attractive targets?
Something I think is interesting is just looking at the history of cyber attacks, right? For a while, hospitals were actually big targets. And if you think about it, it makes sense, at least from the viewpoint of hackers. Hospitals have data that's vital to its operations, and people could die if patient charts are lost, right? But after some hospitals were targeted, hospitals throughout the country responded really fast. They bolstered IT systems. They spent a lot of money on cybersecurity literacy training. When you look at municipalities, a lot of them don't have the budget to allocate those resources to bolstering their securities. I think, you know, you could say that hospitals learned from attacks on other hospitals, while municipalities still really view this as an abstract threat. At least that was the case here in Baltimore.
You know, we had a story on The Takeaway a couple weeks ago about a vulnerability in WhatsApp. And one of the things that that emerged in that conversation was sort of the onus that is on the end user to, you know, update their software and put in these patches to make sure that they're not vulnerable to security hacks. Lee, is it reasonable to expect cities like Baltimore to totally be on top of cybersecurity if it's something like a Microsoft patch, or as you mentioned? I mean, isn't that something that could fall through the cracks?
Absolutely, and it will continue to happen. So there is a need for sort of a new approach and more help and assistance. So that's some of what we're involved with and working with some of the federal government agencies and with the private sector and nonprofit. So there's a nonprofit organization out of Silicon Valley called Adaptable Security that we're working with. Also, they're working closely with NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, and the Department of Commerce to provide volunteers to help local governments and do, you know, that information security awareness that Emily mentioned. That's so vital because essentially it's not really the responsibility of any one person nowadays for information security. Everybody has to be more aware. Everybody needs a little more training and attentiveness to these issues. And there's new resources that we should pull in, which are beyond the scope of what any local city or government could reasonably expect to have. Those same retired professionals before they retired were pretty expensive. So now if there's a way to bring together help for local governments that doesn't break their budget, that does help raise everybody's training level so that they can do a better job in preventing some of these, that's part of the way forward.
Also, you know, I'm wondering, we don't know who exactly was behind these attacks, but are there suspects here in terms of, you know, are these foreign adversaries? Are these national adversaries that are interested in hacking into systems? Or have we just not seen a pattern yet in who's behind these attacks, particularly when it comes to state and local governments?
The FBI and Secret Service are both aiding Baltimore in investigating the attacks right now. And because of that, the city is being very tight-lipped about giving any information out. So I don't have a lot of information about who they're suspecting, but the cybersecurity expert I've talked to, and perhaps Liam can chime in here, all suggest it's a foreign adversary. That's what was the case in Atlanta. It's what's been, from what I understand, traditionally the case in municipalities, but we don't have confirmation here.
Also, we know that Baltimore decided not to pay the ransom behind this attack. Was that an effective strategy?
Well, from all the cybersecurity experts I've spoken to, which at this point in the duration of the attack has been a lot, the one thing people keep saying is that the reason why these attacks keep happening is because ransoms keep getting paid. So the common philosophical viewpoint from the cybersecurity community is that no one should ever pay the ransom because if no one ever did, the attacks would stop. That's been the attitude of Baltimore leaders. One thing that our mayor, Jack Young, keeps saying is he wished that someone with the resources of these hackers could instead use their powers for good. For now, we won't be paying.
And Lee, going forward, are there cities or even private companies in particular, we mentioned hospitals, that could serve as a model for how to move forward in a secure way?
Well, there's a sort of a broader approach needed, like with public-private partnerships, and that's part of what we're working on. The National Institute of Standards and Technology, several federal agencies have been working with smart cities and communities around the world. There's something called the Cybersecurity Privacy Advisory Committee that I have a group called an Action Cluster with, working with the city of Syracuse that brings together academics, IBM, Microsoft, Dell, VMware, other vendors to assist cities and municipalities in improving their practices and upgrading their systems over time. So there's a broader approach needed, and beyond that, there's a specific secure cloud architecture model for not just for one company or one city government, but for a whole region. That is what I'm working on and promoting with our cybersecurity, privacy, and rights-inclusive architecture for a cloud approach. So essentially, if Baltimore got hacked, if everything was backed up in the cloud, would it really matter? And the answer is no, because you lost a day's data, not, you know, getting the whole city shut down. So if you modernize your approach and work collaboratively and use cloud for backup, then essentially the cities become less vulnerable. Going back to what was said, I'm afraid, of course, cities shouldn't pay the ransom, but exactly because there's probably hundreds more I know police departments that have been hacked that have paid the ransom just to get their systems back. So Baltimore's done the right thing by not paying, but they're going to pay the price. They're going to be down for months. It's going to cost much more than $10 million to restore because they're going to need to buy a new system. Some of that data will never get recovered, or most of it will never get recovered. It's going to be just looking at Atlantis case and how much of a headache and what the cost was over time. So we need a new approach, a different approach that's been taken in the past, or this is guaranteed to continue to happen and guaranteed to continue to get worse over time.
Lee McKnight is an associate professor in the iSchool, the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University. And Emily Sullivan is a City Hall reporter for WYPR in Baltimore. Thanks to you both for being with us.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.